Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Meeting of the Unknowing Minds podcast. This one is definitely going to be one for the Meeting of the Unknowing Minds, without the question of the Unknowing Minds. It's going to be an interesting podcast tonight. We're looking forward to it. Welcome to the table. Thank you for pulling a seat up. As always, I'm your host, Matt Eshy, the head cross, associate head track and field coach at UAB. It is tremendous to have everybody here. We're looking forward to it. Hopefully, you got a comfy chair and you're set and ready to go. If you're walking, running, if you're sitting back, relaxing in the middle of the day, or whatever the case might be, it is incredible to have you here. So let's go ahead and pop a top. If you want to pour the sweet tea, get a little drops of something on ice, or get some water, whatever the case, whatever your choice of drink might be for the night, the afternoon, the day, whatever works. Even put another pot of coffee on. It could be about a good 60-70 minutes, and we're gonna get rocking and rolling here. If anything, the last few weeks we've been going into some really serious conversations. We've had some phenomenal guests, everything from Leroy Burrell and Coach Leroy Burrell to Mr. Sam Seams, the president of the Coaches Association. But last week we lightened it up and had Tanja Buford Bailey on the podcast. It was incredible. Go back and listen to it. It's flying up the charts right now. Helps us be a top 40 running podcast in the country in Apple Chartable. That's right. I was trying to think of that one. Chartable. So it's incredible to have everybody here. And thank you very much for joining us again. We're glad we could be one of those podcasts you enjoy listening to on a weekly basis, hopefully weekly basis. But without further ado, we'll get to our guest here in a minute. But let's get the panel. As always, let's get the people sitting here at the table alongside me. First and foremost, the gentleman who's taking care of the Rio Grande Valley down there, Mr. Darren Flowers. Darren, how are we doing, sir?
I don't know if I'm taking care of it, but it is taking care of me. I'm ready to I'm on the road right now. I'm ready to get home and pop a top myself.
There you go. You're always on the road doing something on a Wednesday night.
So. I know, man. I practiced last week. You know, I got gymnastics duty this week. So yeah, you know, life of a dad and a coach, man.
Hey, by the way, that hill you put a picture of up, I don't think that was much of a hill. It looked more of like a bump.
That's all we got down here, man. That's all we got.
I know, man. Alongside him, we've got Mr. Tom Sage. You did a phenomenal job last week. Tom, how are we doing?
Doing well. Bittersweet. Just moved out of my house, so staying at relatives right now.
Oof, man, oh, man. Hey, good luck. Let's just put it that way.
Appreciate it. Well for you.
We've got trying to figure out what bottle to actually open up over there out west in Reno. We got Mr. Scott Williamson. Scott, how are we doing, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Been a long day. We've been practicing pretty consistently, so it may be time to open up something, that's for sure. So,
hey, last time we talked to you, you had a three-hour practice, and you're already exhausted. Have you gotten past that three-hour threshold? I mean, Bell's going for, like, the 24-hour stuff.
Oh, man, 3 hours that first week was about ready enough to kill me, you know. I was getting pretty used to watching my shows on the couch and, you know, getting outside and having to practice for 3 hours, a little too much for me, but I can probably make it a little closer to 4 to 5 now if I had to, but luckily my sessions don't go much longer than that.
Man, it's, hey, just come on, get the tolerance going again. Let's go.
Hopefully. I'm hoping that we are all able to build up our tolerance and have a good season.
I'd agree with you right there. Hey, Birmingham's going to be open for meat, so let's see what happens indoors. Then we got the man who's, I think, practicing as much as I am, actually, but with the full track team, he's practicing absolutely more than I am, but been going for a long time. Mr. John Bell down in SLU. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Yeah, I've been working so hard or practicing so much that I gave the team the last 2 days off. I said, I don't want to see until Thursday. So I've enjoyed yesterday and today to myself. So it's been great.
Good. I'm glad. We always need some time to recoup. No questions about it. And then, of course, we've got the man whose bookshelf always changes, definitely finds a new bestseller to be reading. Next time he's going to put a fireplace up and a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a pipe and everything along those lines. Mr. Mike Erb, how we doing, sir? How's Bloomington?
I'm good. Got the just got a notification. My robe's coming in tomorrow from Amazon, so I should be all set with the pipe and the book. And, you know, now that I've got some good whiskey recommendations, I could maybe do a little of that as well. So. Put the whole picture together.
This podcast is changing drastically.
You said this would be a fun one, ladies and gentlemen. No questions about it. But we'll also say that We will definitely, if he comes in with his robe and he's got a bestseller on there and we've got the crackling of a fire behind it, it's either he's taking his whole game to a new level or we've got about 15 inches in Bloomington, one of the two. It's happened. I mean, hey, Minnesota's got, what, 9 or 10 up there up in Minneapolis? Am I right on that I just saw?
I think I saw they had a fair amount of snow up there, so good for them.
Hey, good luck.
How that outdoor season's going for them.
I tell you one thing, it was funny because what's up?
Is it too soon?
That might be a little early.
Oh, okay. Who knows on that one? I was going to say we were lucky enough to have Gary Wilson on a few weeks ago with a seriousness, and I saw a picture of him and his wife out shoveling track off for the high schoolers. I was like, man, oh, man. But I don't know. It might be the only track being used. Who knows? Anyway. But tonight, we are very, very fortunate to have a man who kind of inspired, I think if some of you guys don't know this, and I'll tell the quick story on this, but I had originally had a thought of doing a podcast when we were in the middle of beginning of COVID. And I had the thought, Mike Cunningham here, it was kind of the inspiration behind it. Before I could say anything, though, Scott Williams and Scott said, hey, guys, let's do a podcast with some of the conversations we were having. So Scott gets all the credit for at least kicking things down the road, rocking and rolling on this thing. So, but Mike, without question in my mind, to me, was the inspiration to do it. And then watching him do his thing on the Guild Connections podcast, if you haven't listened to it, please go listen to the Guild Connections podcast. There are some unbelievable people that have been on there. The amount of shows, the amount of listens are something we're just striving to get to and that kind of stuff. But so without further ado, I've got to bring in the national sales manager for Guild Track and Field. Gil, I don't know exactly what the title is, but I know you're the national sales manager for Gil Athletics, and I think we're going to roll from there. So, Mike, how are we doing, sir?
I'm doing really good. First of all, gentlemen, it's really awesome to be here. I am a huge fan. I really am about all the podcasts that are out there, and I think everyone that is out there has their own value and is doing a lot of great stuff. It's no hyperbole when I tell you that every Monday morning when I wake up, yours goes straight to my queue. You're the one I listen to every Monday morning, man. I'm just so happy and excited for what you guys do here. Second of all, I do want to apologize to anybody who's listening right now because Tanja said that she was going to do a part two. I really hope no one is expecting this to be part two. And if you were expecting Tanja, I'm sorry. You got Tanja Light. You got me for the week. I'm so sorry.
Tanja extremely light. There's no questions about that one. Jeez Louise. I tell you what, hopefully the comedy at least comes out with that kind of thing, but we're looking forward to hopefully having Tanja back in a few weeks, couple weeks, whatever the case might be. We got some good stuff lined up for you. Trust me, you're gonna keep enjoying the stuff. I know Mike does as well. So, but Mike, some of you guys know, some of you may know, and heck, if you looked in the background before, he's got the Troy emblem going, being the Troy alum. So tell the people, and actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, a classic Troy alum, as we're looking via video here, it's actually crooked. It's actually, I think, going downhill, which would probably make sense being in Troy. But, you know, I'm sorry, Troy coaches, if you're listening.
Man, we're throwing shade already. Man, whoa.
Yeah.
Trust me, this was expected. This is okay.
Yeah, we're going back and forth here. There's no question. Yeah. But so, Mike, how do you get to Troy?
I actually went to high school about an hour from Troy in a little city called Eufaula, Alabama, but took a detour to Chicago for about 3 years. I moved to Chicago to go to college up there, became a college dropout in Chicago, but that is also where I started my coaching career. I started coaching at a local high school there in Chicago and in the Catholic League, and ended up becoming their head coach and knew that I wanted to coach college track. So it was all about how do I get back into college to get a degree so I can, you know, go on and coach. And I was, honestly, by the grace of God, Troy called to recruit one of my kids, a hurdler. And in doing so, I found out that they had a position open for what is called an undergraduate assistant coach. So I got to go down after that and do my undergrad and coach. And really, it was just no different than a graduate assistant position, just working on my undergrad.
That's pretty interesting, coming down from Chicago all the way going back to Troy. So I've had to feel good at least coming back close to home, or at least home, as you know it about that way.
Yeah, I miss the sweet tea, that's for sure. And I definitely did not miss the winters. I'm in Alabama. I was born in Florida. I'm a Southern guy all the way through. And even now here in Champaign, Illinois, I do not like the winters, man. That's when I tend to do most of my traveling is during wintertime.
Oh, no wonder. So you go down to the convention, spend an extra week down there just to make sure it's nice and warm. No questions about
that's right.
It's there. So you go to Troy, you're coaching there, and then where do we head from there?
So I ended up getting my degree in public relations. So I got a BS and BS. And
wanted
to go from there. Yeah. Literally, most people, you might find this entertaining. I don't know. I knew I wanted to be a college coach, and I knew that you didn't have to be a biomechanics major, biology. And I also knew that I wasn't smart enough to be that kind of major. So because I knew I wanted to coach, I knew I just needed a degree. So I went through the list of all the degrees Troy offered, looking for the easiest one. And I got to public relations, and I was like, oh, bet I can do this. Public relations, like that. And I probably convinced myself, like, oh, I'll probably need that for recruiting and stuff. Yeah. No, not at all. But so got my degree, and then luckily, it's kind of crazy, but landed a head coaching job of a junior college in Kansas. So went out to Chanute, Kansas at Neosho County Community College, and got a lot of a good head coaching experience for a year. They had, when I took over the team, I got there May or June of that year, and then I graduated May, June, and then went out there. They had three kids returning to the team. So all summer, all I did was call every high school in the state of Kansas and was like, who do you have left? Like, I didn't even ask like what their marks were. It was just like, who's left? Who has not decided where they're going to go to school? They can come to my place. So I ended up getting it up to like 15 or 20 kids, which, you know, still not that much. So really that entire year, I did nothing but recruit. I just full bore recruiting and ended up signing what I considered probably the number one recruiting class in the nation. I had the number two pole vaulter from White River High School, something like that there, close to Bloomington there, Mike. Matt Campbell was his name. He was a 17-something kid. He was number two in the nation. I had three of the top hurdlers in the country, all from Jersey. They were like 13-4, 13-4, 13-5 electronic. I had the number one 600-meter kid out of Philadelphia, I think he was, somewhere in Pennsylvania. He's number one 600, so he's, 46, 47 quarter guy. Had a 36.300 hurdler down in Texas. I mean, I just crazy. I had this a JUCO kid transferring in, Richard Barber. He's originally from Topeka, Kansas. He was like a 51-foot triple jumper, 25-foot long jumper, and a 7.71 high jumper. I mean, I had, like, I was ready. Barton was the big school, and I was like, oh yeah, we're on, buddy. If it ain't gonna be this year, Lance Brahman was the coach there. I was like, Lance, if it ain't gonna be this year, give me one more year and you're toast, buddy. We're gone. Yeah. But like a lot of people, and hopefully you guys don't have this experience, as I was building up this team, I ended up, we were going to have 80, 90 kids coming in. All along the way, I was concerned about the budget. It's different having 15 kids on the team versus 80. You go to buses and you need another assistant coach and all this kind of stuff. And all along, the athletic director or the president kept telling me, you bring the kids in, we're going to take care of you. And so school started that next year, what would have been my second season there. And my budget was no different than it was the year before. Not one red cent was different.
You had how many kids then?
Somewhere between 80 and 90. It was a lot.
From 3 to 90, essentially, mm-hmm. And you had the same budget.
Exact same.
Wow.
And so, for right or wrong, I was a young kid. I was, 22. Yeah, I was young. For right or wrong, I knew that was wrong. And so my instinct was, well, then I'm just going to leave. I'm not going to do this to the kids. Like, I'm going to help them transfer and we'll, I'll go somewhere else. And so I actually got an interview for the University of Oregon for their assistant coaching job. They chose some guy named Steve Sylvie. He had 20 championship rings or whatever. I don't know. I still think Martin Smith made a mistake. I still kid him today, but one of the people that was one of my contacts was a young lady named Sue Parks at Ball State. And so she called me up and said, hey, if Oregon doesn't hire you, I'll hire you here. Her coach had just left to go to Western Michigan for the head coaching job. And so I knew what I was going to do. I talked to Oregon. They told me, you know, we're going a different direction. I didn't even hang up my phone. It was before cell phones. I clicked the receiver and called Sue and said, if that's the offer still on, I'll be there next weekend.
Wow. So that's how you end up. That's a pretty incredible right there.
I mean, yeah.
I was laughing a little bit. I'm like, okay, explain the number one recruiting class in the country to me. And then when you started recruiting, I was just, recalling it. I was like, I mean, wow. If you could have seen everybody who's, listening, if you could have seen our faces as the numbers started going, we all realized real quick that, yeah, that was probably the number one recruiting class in the country. That was incredible. From 17 Valter to the 13 mid, you know, hurdler, that's a heck of a class.
Yeah. Three 13 mid hurdlers.
Excuse me. I don't want to. Yeah. Three 13 mid. Doesn't matter what is. Holy cow.
If you know, maybe some of you guys know Anthony Acklin. He's the assistant coach at Ole Miss now. Mm-hmm. He was one of those three. He was one of my kids.
Golly. That's incredible right there. So you get down, you come around. So where do we go next from here? I mean, that's an incredible. Yeah. Where do we go next? I mean, that's easy. Yeah.
So Ball State was awesome. Sue is an incredible boss. I got to get her on my podcast one day. It's amazing her tree, you know, the people that have become assistants under her and have moved on to, you know, other places. She does a great job of developing coaches. She really does. So I was with Sue Parks for 2 years, and really that was instrumental in my actual coaching. So after my first year at Ball State, I got to go to level two for the first time. I had never been able to go to level two because it was always the same time as the Chula Vista Elite High Hurdle Camp, which I was the director for the high hurdles there. So I finally, that wasn't the same time. So I got to go on to level two. And do you guys hear that in the background? If you're picking that up, so my kids, Convy.
Are those your parrots?
No, I wish. I don't wish. I don't want a bird at all. But my kids conned me into guinea pigs. And so I've got these two squealing guinea pigs. Yeah, I could tell by your face.
Man, what are they doing?
They're both female, first of all. But yeah, man, freaking, once you have kids, man, you get conned into so many things. I've got four pet turtles. I did have two pet bullfrogs, but one went to the big pond up in heaven. So we just have one king frog now. Two guinea pigs. We're babysitting a gerbil for the next week. I'm overrun.
You need a zoo right now, really.
Yeah, I feel like
a little heated pad outside. You can put everybody out there, let them sit back and relax, and you can actually have some quiet time, even though until the gerbil runs inside.
Yeah.
Hey, all you have to do is get one vicious rooster. They'll never want a pet ever again.
Yeah, my kid would. You got to know my kid, man. He loves all those things. He's an animal lover through and through.
All right, so back to where you're going from here, if you would.
So I go to level two, and yep. You know, I wanted to be this great sprints and hurdles coach, but it was that. So I signed up for sprints and hurdles at Boise State, and it actually was full. Mike Corn calls me up and says, "Hey, sorry, the class is full. Would you want to do jumps?" He goes, "You'll learn a lot with jumps." And I was like, "Man, I'm not a jumps coach. I'm a sprints coach. You know, I'm a sprints and hurdles guy." So I did jumps, and thank God that I did. So Boo Schexnader was the teacher. And I'm telling you what, I took sprints and hurdles the very next year. And, you know, I had Dennis Shaver, Gary Winkler, gosh, I can't even remember the third teacher. And no disrespect to Dennis and Gary. I mean, obviously, Gary, you know, Tanja talked about Gary. He's a guru.
He's
Dennis is amazing. Yeah.
Yep.
Boo Schexnader. That dude changed my coaching life. I had a kid, and all the kids got better, but I had this one kid at Ball State. She was a 17 footer, 35, I think, in the triple out of high school from Virginia. Her first 2 years with the former coach, he did a great job. She got up to 19 something in the long, and I think right at 40 feet in the triple. Did a great job. My first year with her, I got her at like, I think we got 20 feet in the long, like right at 20, and maybe we jumped 40 feet and a half, 41 feet. You know, pretty good job for a kid that developed, right?
Yeah.
Boo Schexnader came into the house, and her senior year, she ended up going, you'd have to check the school records, 22 feet, I think it is, in the long jump, and 44 feet in the triple, 43, 10, wow. 44. We only had her do the quarter two times, conference indoor 4x4 and conference outdoor 4x4 on Kent State's big 300 meter track. She split 52 point in the 4x4. I mean, she was also she was conference champ in the 60 and the 2, I think, as well. First kid to win four conference titles, man or woman at that point in the MAC title. She was pretty good. and on a book scholarship, by the way, she was 97% academic, international business major. She married a 7'7" high jumper from the Adam Shank. He jumped for UNC. And I heard they just had a baby a year or two ago. So Mike Erb, you need to track her down.
You're leading me down that path. Like, how long ago did she graduate? When did she get married? When are these kids coming along? Because I gotta get on the horn. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. Let me tell you, that kid's gonna be super smart, super talented.
Indiana connections. This is all perfect. Yeah, this is great.
Boom.
So Ball State, second year was awesome. Had just a tremendous amount of fun, and really saw, you know, the effect of coaching towards athletes and how they can improve on what they do athletically. And then, you know, my whole goal in my career was to get to the SEC. Being from, you know, Florida and Alabama, the SEC is king. And so the whole goal was to get there. And again, by a lot of luck, I drove to Boise from Muncie, Indiana for level 2. And when I got there, we didn't have big fancy plane tickets back then. We had to drive. They gave me a gas card and said, head west, young man. Yeah. So when I got there, if you've been on Boise campus, you know, they have that river or whatever through it, and everybody watches the kids inner tube and whatnot. And so before registration, I'm out there and I see a coach from Mississippi State. And so I asked him if he knew Darren McFadden. He was a kid that I recruited at Neosho County, but he actually made his grades. So he went to Mississippi State. And so I'm talking to the guy. Guy ends up, he's the associate head coach at that point, Steve Dudley. And so Steve asked me, he goes, so what time did you fly in? And I was like, oh, no, Big Daddy. I ain't got the SEC money. I drove. And he was like, you drove from Indiana? I was like, oh, yeah, all the way through too. I couldn't afford a hotel room. So I, you know, took a couple pit stops to sleep in the car, but I drove all the way. And, wow. And he goes, why did you do that? And I was like, hey, man, if you want to be the best, you got to learn. So here I am. And little did I know, he kind of put that in the back of his head. And so that year with Patricia Soman, that was the jumper, Patty, we were at indoor nationals, and all the kind of all your conference coaches will, back then before we had things like this and coaches collab, you really kind of stick to your conference coaches. You know, you guys all go to the bar and all the MAC coaches would be together and stuff. And so Steve was walking by and I kind of gave him an elbow, and he goes, oh, hey, Mike. He goes, man, we were talking about you the other day. And I was like, man, this guy is a good recruiter. He's making me think like they really were talking about me. He goes, man, what do you want to do? And I was like, man, I want to be you. I want to be sprints and hurdles in the SEC. And he's like, you know what? You're going to make it one day. And I literally, I was like, man, this guy is a great recruiter. Like, I feel like that's true. It's not true, but it makes me feel like it's true.
Yeah.
And that summer, I was at level 2 in UNC Asheville, and Al Schmidt, Big Daddy Al, walked in and took me out of class and said, congratulations, you're a Bulldog. And I made it to the SEC.
I mean, that's a complete change. That's an incredible thing right there. So
yeah, it was a change, all right.
What did you learn down there at Mississippi State?
The grass is not always greener on the other side. and I don't mean that with Mississippi State. You know, those guys and gals that were there, Angela and Keith Powell, Steve Dudley, Al Schmidt, Karen Rademeyer, great, great people. Love them to death. Big Daddy Al is still like a father figure to me, honestly. But I thought my mistake was, and you heard it the way I said it, I really did believe it. I was like, I had made it, right? Yes. So that was my fault right there. I had thought, oh, I'm in, like I'm set for the rest of my life. I made it. When in reality, that's just a step in the stairs, right? I thought, I'm such a fool. I thought, oh, I get to the SEC, life gets easier recruiting. I was a big recruiter. That was one of my main things, right? I was like, oh, when I called people when I was at Ball State, they were like, who, where? You know, when I called it Neosho County, of course, they didn't know who it was. When I called it Troy, they knew who it was because it was the greatest university in the world. But I knew when I called for Mississippi State, they would know who we were and et cetera, right? And I remember one of the first kids I recruited, he ended up setting the indoor high school national record in the 400. His name was LZ Coleman from up in Newburgh Academy up in New York. And spoiler alert, we signed LZ, so it ended up working. But I remember one of my first phone calls with LZ. I was like, hey, so LZ, what, you know, where else are you looking? And he goes, oh yeah, Florida, Baylor, Texas, and it was either UCLA and or USC. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I got to recruit against Mouse. Oh, I got to recruit against Austin, Texas. Yeah. Oh, like it, like punch to the face. Like, oh, it didn't get easier. It actually probably got harder because there ain't that many LZs out there. And I have to sign those guys in Starkville, Mississippi. You know, like there, you can take a bunch, there's a bunch of 52nd quarter milers out there, right? And you can work with them and make them 49s, 48s, and some will hit 47, 46s, 45s. But there ain't many 47, 46s that are there, and that's the ones I got to sign. So it was that cold water splash in the face, like, oh, it got real, man. And then you go to your first SEC meet, and you just, it's not fair.
I think that's the one is, that's one thing that, sorry, excuse me.
You struggled to get people to Stark Vegas? I mean, that's Stark Vegas.
First of all, it used to tick me off when I would say, hey, it's Coach Cunningham from Mississippi State. Oh, Ole Miss? I'm like, oh, how dare you? They still do it. Even today, I'll tell someone, like, yeah, Coach of Mississippi State. Oh, Ole Miss. I'm like, dude, that hurts me. You can't say that. No, it's not Ole Miss. Not at all. But, yeah, Stark Vegas, baby. That's exactly it.
The amazing thing.
I don't hear the story of how you got into the whole coaching thing in the first place. I think what you did – and I might say it's similar to a path just in terms of the technique anyway that I did. It's sort of a lost art of when you're really hustling and you really want to do that and people want to know what you got to do to get into this gig. And it's like, you know, the things like making those contacts and going to those level twos and driving all over the country. And when somebody asks you to be someplace, you just got to be there. You can't say, well, where's my plane ticket or where's my hotel or how am I going to, it's like, no, here's where you need to be. And then the next day you just need to be there. There's no instructions and you've got to be able to figure it out, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I would guess that, you know, if anybody is listening, that's trying to learn how to do this. I mean, I don't see as many people doing that anymore. Just showing up places and saying, I want to work and doing whatever they ask you to do. And then sooner or later, somebody's going to notice that and pay you, you know?
Yeah. When we were at Troy.
Well, I know all of us.
Go ahead. Yeah. Keep going.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, all of us have had student athletes that want to be coaches, aspire to be coaches. And I think you get a lot of the younger kids coming out, men and women that, you know, want to be coaches and they just expect it to happen. Cause I mean, even like, you know, with us, we're fairly young, but it doesn't mean that we haven't been grinding for a long time to get to where we're at. And I think that's kind of a misperception that the gig is easy to get into. And it goes for anything that you're, you know, mastering your craft is, it takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication and a lot of struggle. And you just have to dig heels in and work at it. And then things might start happening. It might not start happening for you, but it might. And that you just got to keep knocking on that door. And I think that's a big misconception.
I think you're spot on, Darren. And I tell you, the other part to that, and this panel is a really good example of that, I think, is we need to, you have to make sure you are defining what success is for you. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it's not always being in the Power Five. I'm a stereotype and say, you know, the majority of coaches out there, and I was one of them, by the way, guilty here, right? If you're not at the Power Five, you're not a coach. Once you get there, life's good. You make the big, but I took a pay cut when I was at Ball State as a women's assistant. I took a pay cut to go down and become the men's women's assistant coach at Mississippi State. Now, that was part of my grind. It was like, oh, it's worth it, though. You know, that's what my whole life was, to get there. But I tell you what, especially now in my role at Gill Athletics, you know, I get to talk to coaches of all levels, you know, high school through Mouse Holloway, right? Whatever.
Yep.
And I tell you what, when you start defining your success based on the impact you can make where you are, man, life gets good. Let me tell you. And you guys are a great example of that, the positive impacts you're making in your circle, where that circle is in St. Louis, Birmingham, Alabama. That's when life gets good.
It's one of the things, amazingly enough, I've talked to, you know, when you're right. there's what, 65 different Division I, quote unquote, Power Five schools, roughly among that. And you know, my coach and Scott's coach, of course, Larry Wozorek, always said, I'm one of the luckiest men in the world. I got one of the best 65 coaching jobs in the country, but it's one of the hellish 65 coaching jobs in the country because it's so hard, because I've got some big names to recruit against and all that stuff. And it's Wiz and I never talked about this, but I know for a fact some other friends of mine in the Power Five schools have talked about this, that have to weigh up, like Herb, definitely. If you listen to Mike Herb's story and where he's been from D3 all the way up to D1, like A, it's not supposed to happen, but B, a hell of a job going from top to bottom. Some people who have been in the Power Fives all their life, and I can list 15, 20 really quickly, they look at you and go, I'm not sure I could go down to the Rio Grande Valley. I don't think I could go to Birmingham, Alabama, and you know, walk into a team that's got five girls on it and actually do it. I'm not used to that. I'm not used to a budget with one third the size of what, you know, hey, we've got 250,000. And oh, by the way, you've got, this isn't our budget, but you've got 70,000 to work with and you have to do the same thing we do. How do you compete on the same level?
Hey, it's a different kind of grind.
Mike, you'll appreciate this. I can tell this story. He'd be okay. Do you remember Randy Heisler?
Oh, yeah.
So Randy Heisler, yep. Say again?
I've met him a few times. He's still around.
A phenomenal guy. Love, yep. Randy to death. Randy became the head coach of Indiana University for a while. And through some issues, he ended up quitting on Indiana. They were having some problems, whatever. I don't know what the deal was. But he ends up going to Ball State. So, you know, where I had been. So fast forward, I'm at Gill Athletics when he gets the job at Ball State, and he comes to pick up some poles, and he starts talking to me. He's like, Mike, he's like, how did you guys do it at Ball State? And I'm like, well, Rand, what do you mean? He's like, man, I should have asked before I took the job, but I was talking to the AD. It was Bubba Cunningham, who's now the AD at University of North Carolina. He's like, Bubba slides me the budget. He goes, I pick it up and I look at him and I go, cross country? Bubba goes, no, Randy, this is cross country, indoor, outdoor. He goes, I looked at him and I was like, this just travel? He's like, no, Randy, this is recruiting, equipment, travel, etc. He goes, man, Mike. And you know, Randy had been at Indiana for so long, he lost perspective of what the rest of the world really operates. I asked him, I was like, Randy, I was like, you went into a conference that is dropping men's track and field left and right. What did you expect? I mean, at Ball State, we had just dropped men's. I was like, what did you expect? We lose this perspective. I think, I'm generalizing again here, but you know, when you get to a certain level, sometimes you lose perspective. It really is maybe no different than we do as regular people in our jobs when you get a salary, right? A lot of times we then start spending to that. And then I get a raise and I automatically start spinning. We don't live down here anymore. And I think that catches us off guards when bad things happen. And that's a lot of what we're seeing today with coronavirus in colleges and in businesses in the private sector.
Yeah, it's a really dangerous thing to do, especially because a lot of us turn around and go, so what's our budget? What is our budget? And the problem is we see other coaches that are, you know, in our department, and no disrespect to my coaches that are in UAB's athletic department, but I know a lot of them are you know, they're spending what they normally spend and nothing crazy. We're doing, I mean, I'm a cross country budget. I will tell you is unbelievably what we're doing it for this year is unfathomable because it's so tiny. And we're lucky. We host the biggest meet in the country last weekend. And now we've got the conference meet. So we get two home meets, but we always have one home meet. We're doing it for so little, so much pennies that I'm not sure there's many other people in the country actually being able to do it and still provide a Division I experience.
I'm just happy that the money that you are not spending, it did not, your Oakley budget did not get cut. When you're doing those videos on social media and you got your Oakley still on, I'm like, man, Matt, you're just too cool, man. Too cool for school with you, that stuff, man.
Wow. Okay. There we go. I'll have to step the Oakley game up. I didn't realize.
Hey, remember
that, guys. That was part of his contract.
It had to be. I know.
He wrote that in his contract.
Remember, I am the social media guru. I see every one of you guys. There ain't nothing that happens on social that old Mike don't see. I love the social. So you're going to get out there and do your interview with your Oakleys on? I'm taking notes.
Hey, I will promise you one thing with the interviews with the Oakleys, though. I promise you this. When I do it, I have no idea what the girls are doing behind me. I have no idea what my girls are doing behind me. If they do an interview or they do some dance behind me, all of a sudden, I have zero idea until all of a sudden I watch the video going, I actually don't watch the video. People tell me what they did because I just won't watch the video because I don't want to hear myself talk. And so I just do the interview, make a look at my director of ops and go, how's it sound? She goes, awesome. That was great. And then I said, how was it behind me? And she's like, dude, it was hilarious. And then she tells me what happens. And I'm like, oh, come on.
They call them one take mad over here. One take. This is,
put it one to the take. Social. Let's get this done. Okay, so let's change course just here a little bit because some people don't know. How do you get to Gil? Because you've been to Mississippi State, you're at Troy, you're everywhere in between. You're having, I mean, you got a wake-up call when you're coaching. Okay, this is what you're going to have to go up against. But now you've been coaching for a while. How do you get to Gil Athletics?
Well, I took a little sidetrack. So at Mississippi State, we had a pretty large controversy that last year that I was there. It was 2005. I won't go into it here.
Nope.
Sadly, you could just do an internet search. You'll find out what we were going through in 2005. But honestly, the other on top of that was 2005. We have a really kick-ass 4x4. We ran 3.something, and we got fifth at nationals. And that just killed me, man. I was like, you run 3.0, you're supposed to win. and we were fifth. That was the year LSU with Xavier Carter, Kelly Willie, maybe Benny Brazil was on there. You know, they set the national record. Minnesota, I think, was in front of a Texas Tech. It's just sick, man. So that was my 10th year of coaching. We're going through, I'll call it personally devastating controversy at that time. It really affected me and kids and media, if you will, on what was going on. So I kind of took a step back and said, you know what, why don't I just get away from track completely and see if it brings me back in? Is track and field really supposed to be what my life is about? So I was living in Mississippi, so I was playing a lot of poker and actually making more money playing poker part-time. Did you just realize? Yeah. I'm so glad this you don't
I almost went down that route.
Scott, man, we got to dive more into this. We got to dive more into this.
Let me tell you, he lives in Reno, the worst place in this country for casinos.
I've played in Philadelphia, Mississippi, so I might know where you play.
Hold on, boss. That's right there. Silver Star. That is that's my home casino, essentially. Yeah. So I was making more money playing cards part-time than I was even at Mississippi State. And, I was pretty good. And so I decided I'm going to move to Las Vegas and play cards for a living. Here's how well the staff and my Big Daddy Al Schmidt knew us. I walked in to give my 2 weeks notice. I don't even think I had the thing. I think I had it in my pocket. I didn't even get a word out. He looks at me and goes, you're moving to Vegas. And I was like, I had told nobody. I was like, holy crap, how in the world? He knew me. And so he's like, hey, he goes, if you need to get out going now, you don't have to put in 2 weeks, just go. And I was like, nah, dog, I might need another check. Let me get one more check before I go to Vegas. It's okay, coach.
You need to be able to blow them with some money.
Something, man. I might need that extra dollar. You know? So I'd never been to Vegas before in my life. And I packed my little CRV up and moved to Vegas, baby.
Golly.
And that's all I did. I didn't deal. I didn't deal cards, by the way.
Let's clarify. Deal drugs. Real
I didn't deal drugs. Yeah. Didn't deal drugs either. I mean, I guess I need to clarify that side. But yeah, no part-time job. I literally every day sat at a poker table somewhere in the city of Vegas.
Did you ever make?
How long were you out there?
What's that?
How long were you out there for? How long did that last?
Dude, 1 year, and I was like, man, this fantasy land is not real life. I realized I started kind of picturing like 30 years from now. I was 29, so I was like, can I be doing this at 59? Like, is this a real life? And so I decided that, you know, no matter how big or how small, I kind of liked a guaranteed paycheck every 2 weeks. So I want to get back to the real world.
I figure that's something that probably becomes apparent very quickly. That's either for you or it's not. And it doesn't take a whole lot of time to figure that out.
It wasn't as fun as I thought it was going to be. You know, when you watch it on TV and stuff, you know, I watched Rounders every night for, I don't know, 3 years in a row, literally. Rounders, and you watch the World Series of Poker, and back then, you know, you could watch a poker show on TV every night back in, you know, 05 and 06 and stuff. But when you're out there and your lunch money's on the table every day, that's pretty stressful.
Yeah.
Did you take anything from the track and field world and apply it out there?
Yeah. That's a really, really good question. It was interesting how track and poker coincided with me. That kind of even to this day, is still a part of my life. So, I was a pretty good recruiter, I think. At least that was one of the things I liked. And so for me, playing cards was less about what the cards were. I mean, that plays into it, of course. And it was really more about motivation. When I'd recruit a kid, I wanted to know what their motivations were for school. Some it was a full ride. Some it was, the logo on the chest. Some it was a degree, et cetera. So I'd want to learn what their motivation, their parents' motivation, and play off of that. So out in Vegas, my big skill set was when you sat down that money in front of you, how much did it mean to you? I had kids that come out, their college kids, and they'd sit down with $1,000 and that was it. That's what they brought to Vegas for the whole week. And so, when a kid has all of his lunch money on the table, he's less likely to bluff. His range of cards is much smaller. Where I played against company owners, millionaire. I mean, I played against them. I eventually played pretty high. I got to a point where I was playing with about $20,000 to $30,000 on the table. My favorite game was a 25-50 pot limit mixed game. So we, 10 to 30 was a pretty standard buy-in. But those guys, they would sit down with $1,000 or $5,000, whatever the game was, and they had 20-30 more thousand in the bank. And so they wanted to go there, and it's fun to bluff people. So they'd want to go there and bluff and things like that. So their range of cards was much, much longer. But one of the cool things about track and poker in Vegas, I really, when I first got there, aspired to get to the big table at my home casino. Out there was the Wynn Las Vegas. And there was a guy up there. He was the 1997, 98 World Series of Poker champion. His name's Huck Seed. 6 foot, like seven. You just can't miss him. He's just so tall. He's real quiet. And I finally get to the one of the bigger games and play against him pretty regularly. And he is just so intimidating. He's 6 foot seven when he sits down. I mean, he's just so tall. You know who he is. You know he's the world champ and all this stuff. And doesn't talk. And he'll just be betting here's 100, here's 100. And then all of a sudden he's like, all right, how about 1,000? And you're like, what happened, man? So this guy next to me is chatting me up, and he's like, so what do you do? Where are you from? And I was like, oh, actually I live here. And he's like, oh, what do you do for a living? And I was never one of those guys that like to lie to people and whatever. Some people used to tell, some of the professional poker players would say they're in financial management. Some people would say they're in retirement advising, those kind of fun little things. But I told him, I was like, yeah, this is what I do, man. I'm a professional poker player. And he goes, oh, well, what'd you used to do? And I was like, oh, I was a track coach. I used to coach Mississippi State. And right across from me, Mr. Huck Seed lifts his head up. He goes, you run track? And I was like, oh, no, dog, I don't run track. I was like, but I coached it. He's like, my brother was a pretty good track kid. I was like, oh, yeah. And, I was like, yeah, right. Okay. How many times you hear this? He's like, yeah, he was a pretty good miler. I was like, oh. I was like, what did he run? He goes, well, he went to one of the Ivy Leagues, maybe Dartmouth or something like that. And he's like, yeah, he ran 410. I was like, oh, okay. He's legit, And so we just started chatting up, and he hands me his phone when he gets up to leave. He goes, hey, put your cell phone number in. Let's hang out. So he became a good friend and mentor of poker, right? Fast forward, my first year at Gill, I go out to Las Vegas for level two, and I host a social at a place called, it's closed now, some kind of whiskey bar. I didn't like whiskey back then, so I didn't appreciate it. This guy, he was like a hospitality professor at UNLV. He had a room of 1,000 whiskeys, rare ones. And, I was so unsophisticated. I was like, yeah, it's cool. Can I get a beer? But I sit down with the head coach at UNLV, who I didn't know very well at that point, but I do know now. She would be a great guest for you guys, by the way, Yvonne Wade. And so Yvonne and I are talking, and I tell her, I used to live here and play poker, yada, yada. And she goes, I know a professional poker player. And I was like, yeah, we're a dime a dozen. I'm sure you do. You live in Vegas, She's like, yeah, man. She goes, this guy comes out to my track one day and asks if he can run. And so I said, yeah, sure. Just stay out in lane 8 for me. She goes, the next day, my advancement office calls me up and says, hey, some guy donated $5,000 because you were really nice to him. And she goes, well, can I get this guy's phone? I'd like to thank him.
Yeah.
It was Huck Seed.
Huh.
Wow. And they're now them and, Yvonne's married to Larry. Those three are great friends. I actually went out a couple years ago in Thanksgiving during Larry's birthday, and Larry and Yvonne and Huck and I are all having dinner. And it was like these two worlds colliding, man. It was kind of cool, actually. It was really cool. Yeah.
Small world, man.
Very. I've never would have said there had been a track and a poker connection besides people who play cards and all that kind of stuff. But to have a World Series of Poker champ, the heavyweight champ in the world, and a connection to track, and he loves track. He didn't know I ended up at Gill. So at dinner, he's like, yeah, I was trying to learn how to throw the javelin. So I bought this javelin off of Amazon. And I was like, dude, you should have called me up. I'll take care of you.
So Scott, hey Scott, you need to make sure you let people run out there at your track.
Oh yeah, apparently they're usually we have just a bunch of you know, professors and stuff out there, and I try to be nice to them because hopefully they'll help our kids out. Hopefully we get some more of those Tahoe people coming in with the money.
There you go.
I mean, being nice is always the right thing, right?
Right.
I mean,
treat people like you want to be treated.
Yeah, and if anybody knows Yvonne, if she would not have wanted him to run for what, you know, let's say they're using all eight lanes or whatever, she would have politely said, hey, in an hour, we'll be out or something like that. She was just a nice person. That's who she is.
You know what? One of the most valuable things that Coach V Hill ever told me was do right by people, whether it be your student athletes, your administrators, your assistant coaches. You know, obviously he's had a long historic career. He said, yeah, do right by people and that will take you far.
Doing the right thing is always the right thing. That's right. V Hill. I mean, come on, man. I think it's God. Joe V Hill is where the rankings go. So if he says it, that's pretty good gospel.
Pretty good stuff.
I agree.
Yeah. So did you get a call? So you jumped a little bit and I'm just curious, how do you get, cause you get to go, so you're in Vegas, you're playing poker, you're meeting the great people and, you know, incredible people, no questions about that. But do you get a call or is it the gentleman you just met? Like, how does that get to rock and roll to where now you're selling track equipment?
Yeah. Sorry about that. No,
you're okay. I loved it. Yeah.
You can tell poker still on the video, they can see this is one of my four frames of every poker chip, every place I've ever played poker at. So poker's still a big part of my life. I had decided that after that first year that, you know what, it's time to get back into the real world. So I started applying for coaching jobs. That was one of the reasons why moving to Vegas was a low risk for me, because I knew my network and my abilities that if I went broke in the very first month, I'd be able to get a job somewhere. It may not be where I'd want to be, but I could have gotten a job somewhere. So as we start ending in spring, going into summer, I'm applying to different places. And honestly, I'm spoiled, to be real frank. You know, Mississippi State, you know, the amount of shoes and things, I mean, it's absurd, honestly. And it's absurd. There's a point blank period right there. It's absurd. Where at Ball State, we bought a pair of trainers 1 year and then a pair of spikes. And I mean, we had to flip flop. And honestly, I'm kind of glad I had the self-awareness at least, but I was spoiled. I was like, yeah, I got to be at a quote unquote big school. Yeah, I just can't do it. So none of those jobs were available and none of those jobs were hiring me. So I had called my now former teammate, he doesn't work with us anymore, at Gill, and just said, hey, do you know of any jobs? Because, you know, we talk to coaches all across the country. We know a lot of the jobs that are opening up or going to open up. And so, you know, we talked a little bit and then he goes, you know what? He goes, actually, we're hiring. And so I was like, oh, what's that look like? And what it ended up being is you're going to pay me more than I made coaching. I was going to get to go home at 5 o'clock on most nights. The decisions of 18, 19 year old boys and girls don't affect my lives anymore. And I still get to go to all the track meets in the country. It was like, where do I sign up? And so, interviewed with, my still boss, my VP of sales, and so blessed that I got the job. And honestly, life-changing for me. I mean, this is where I met my wife, two kids, you know, I've been here almost 15 years. That's the longest I've ever lived in. The previous place I'd ever lived the longest was 4 years. So, I mean, this, and I'm talking about my whole life. Elementary school, et cetera, only 4 years. I moved around a lot when I was a kid. So this is, you know, this is home.
And that's, I mean, again, it's connections and making sure you keep people. I think that's something that is about a lot in this world. We talked about, we've kind of, braised over the subject. I think the best words for it are, and it might be better ones, but you know, it's keeping connections with people and talking to people and making sure, again, not no pun intended with the Guild of Connections podcast, nothing of that kind of stuff. It's just making sure that you stay in touch with people, because those opportunities open up. Whether it be moving from a mid-major to a power or power to mid-major, something doesn't happen, you need to take a step back. We've seen a lot of coaches that have taken a step back, and or somebody like yourself, they're going, oh, like if I keep going down this road in Vegas, as fun as it is to have, you know, 400 different poker chips from 400 different casinos, we can't do that because I'm not being able to sustain myself. So I've got to be able to move to sustain it. And then all of a sudden, boom, you found, you know, the wife, the kids happen, and everything goes along those lines. That's a pretty incredible thing. So is that, go ahead.
You alluded to it. It's not by chance that the podcast that we created here at Gill is called Connections. That was a very intentional name about people, and it's very intentional, and we'll get into it a little bit more here in a little bit, but you know, it's very intentional that we don't focus on just the you know, we've got some incredible guests like Miles Holloway and Ron yep. Alice and stuff, but that we have awesome high school coaches, and we have earlier before we hit the record button, we were talking about the University of New Mexico. One of my first interviews was the guy who runs that convention, the Albuquerque convention, that sets up that track and takes it down. You know, the guys and gals behind the scenes that make our great sport move, that connection, that whole global environment was extremely important to me, because it, you're right. Not only to keep the connections, because you never know who can help you one day, but keeping the connections because that's the right thing.
Yes.
No one is beneath you. I'm sorry. You are not above anybody in this world. I don't care who you are, what your name is.
And ultimately, you know, when you get to the end of your career, you know, you find a lot of coaches that are almost resent that they spent their whole career focused on one thing, winning, and really didn't take the time to nurture relationships and make connections. And to me, like, I hope I get to the end of my life and the end of my career and I can look back and say, man, I made some great friends and I made some great relationships. That's what I hope that I, you know, I can say when I get done.
Yeah, no questions about that. I mean, that was actually one thing I was about to allude to, Mike, and you made a perfect point where there's, I was going to say, is that where the Connections podcast comes from? Is everybody you've talked to and met? It was legitimately coming out of my mouth before you were able to just pull it right there. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know, my life has become what it is today because of the people that are in it. You know, I'm very fiercely protective of my university because that's where I found my faith. You know, and it wasn't because of the buildings or the football team. It was a, you know, group of people that never gave up on me, my 3 years there at Troy, that ultimately led to, you know, me giving my life to Christ. So much so that when my son was born, when we knew we were having a son, it was very important to me. My son's name is Troy Cunningham. It's named after that school because of the people that represent that school. Absolutely. So for the podcast, you know, the idea was actually kind of a multi-layer idea, a little bit to what Darren was alluding to there. You know, I have such a, my career changed at Gill when it went from I sell track equipment and the switch flipped and it was like, oh, I serve coaches because they serve athletes. It's a little bit, you've seen like these triangles, you know, the CEOs mm-hmm. on top and middleman, you know, yep. head coach, right? What we actually believe in, and a lot of other great companies do too, is that that triangle is actually upside down. So our CEO actually serves our VPs, and our VPs serve the middle manager and et cetera, right? So that's kind of how I've thought about what I do. I serve you guys. You guys may pay our company for pole vault pits and hurdles and all that kind of stuff, but ultimately that's so that you can coach your kids and go affect those 30 to 100 kids, and you can go focus on coaching hurdle or pole vault. You know what I'm saying? That's the why of it. So I was, you know, I'm so blessed. I get to talk to coaches every day. I mean, that's my whole life. It's the best job in the whole world, to be real honest with you. And I was talking to a coach, I was in a coach's office, and I won't mention his or her name. But this person, every one of us here would say that this person, like your career would be maybe better than you thought it could be if you could achieve the things that this guy or gal did, right? I mean, they're amazing. And so they're getting near the end of their career. And I asked the coach, I was like, hey, so when are you thinking about retiring? You know, getting close. And they said, you know what? I need to retire sooner than later. And I said, oh, well, why is that? And they were like, I owe my spouse and my children. And I was like, so tell me more about that. they got married during track season. So he or she has missed every anniversary. They missed their kids' track seasons growing up because they were at track meets. And so this coach was like, I need to retire so that I can take my spouse to Paris and my kids and da da da, you know, make up. And you could just see it in his eyes. It was regret. And that's one of the toughest things in the world. You ever feel like you're getting unmotivated? Go to your local senior citizens home and talk with those individuals and see the ones that have regret in their eyes. That'll motivate you to do things differently today. So this coach, I had been thinking about starting something to help coaches off the track. There are so many amazing places for you to learn how to coach a long jumper better, a miler better, et cetera, right? Level USATF has a great education, USTF CCA. Now we have this coaches collab, which is just phenomenal. Yep. So I started a group, unbeknownst to anybody, by the way, my company, Gill Athletics, had no clue about this because it was, I was like, I don't want, it's not Gill. It's just me serving coaches. I started a group on Facebook called Beyond the Track, where yes, we only had one rule, and that was we can talk about anything except for how to coach better. So we started talking about, you know, financial health, family relationship health, your own mental health and things like that. And, you know, it's been amazing. It's gotten some traction. I really, my goal is that a coach will take it over one day because I made it for coaches. I started doing interviews inside of Beyond the Track with coaches. We do them live over Facebook Live, and we talk about, you know, a little bit about their career, but then what are they struggling with, and then how can people connect with them to help. And we had coaches who would saw someone else being interviewed and said, hey, I have that problem too, and they started connecting. And so I didn't even know about podcasts at that point, but that started kind of like, there's something here. And so I wanted to bring a podcast to Gill, so I had to learn it first. So I decided to start my own podcast. I'm a big Joe Rogan Experience podcast fan, if anybody, yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm also a really good copycat. So I started the Mike Cunningham Experience. And so I interviewed, I have a pretty wide network of people. So my first guest was a good friend of mine. I've known him since he was 17 years old. It was Justin Gatlin. I needed someone to like, prove that I was good right off the bat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I needed a legitimizer real quick. So I got Jay on there. But, you know, one of my good friends is one of the top nuisance chefs in the world. So he specializes in all these wild boars down in Alabama that destroy forest, and these lionfish down on the coast. Another good friend of mine, it was in the group called All for One, for any of you guys that are around my age that not All for One. I'm sorry. Color Me Bad. I know, you know, I knew, you know, Color Me Bad. So I had him on,
Color Me Bad.
They sang a song called All for One, didn't they?
I think that's the
song. Yeah.
Another friend of mine, I didn't actually get him on the podcast, but I got some other people. A good friend of mine's Vanilla Ice. I'm a huge Vanilla Ice fan. I'm just giving you all the fodder to make fun of me on this.
I think I saw you post something the other day about those kids watching Vanilla Ice for the first time. That's incredible.
It was fun, man.
That was brilliant.
He's a good dude, man. Let me tell you what. Here's why. See, you're getting me on these tangents, man. Here's why I'm a Vanilla Ice fan. First of all, is because he was the number one. And anybody who rolls their eyes about Vanilla Ice, I dare you to say you did not jam to Ice Ice Baby. First of all, get over yourself.
Second, of all, every one of us did.
So we're gonna be doing it on the drives home or whatever. In case tomorrow morning, be like, you know what, Ice Ice Baby, let's go.
Absolutely. And by the way, he's not a one-hit wonder. He's got a lot of amazing songs. But he goes broke. He starts doing drugs. He almost dies from an overdose.
Yeah.
He's broke. No one knows this. When Ice Ice Baby was number one, he went to interior design school.
Yes.
And so he was like, I'm broke. What am I going to do? And then he realized, this is the world they live in. When he was rich, he had bought all these houses because that's what you do. You're going to go live in your house in Vail, and you're going to go live in your house over here in Miami and all this stuff, right? So all these houses had been sitting there, they've been dilapidated. He put his interior design to work and started fixing them up and selling them. That's how he got back to being, you know, comfortably wealthy. And now he actually has the number one show on the DIY network. I don't know.
DIY, yeah.
Yeah, DIY, where he buys houses, like these $1 million houses that are all, you know, dilapidated, and sells them for $3 million. He's amazing. Go watch that show. That dude has an amazing eye. But he still tours, and I'm telling you what, that dude knows how to entertain. He is an amazing. He's an amazing performer. Amazing. Amazing. So go ahead.
No, I don't think people who know how to entertain forget that. I mean, some of the best people you've ever heard, is their music might not be phenomenal, it's good, but they're incredible entertainers.
First of all, that song is amazing. It's not good. It's amazing.
I didn't say anything about the song. I just said, I know. I was hoping you'd actually be able to drop that for us a little bit.
So I got
that. May be the intro music this week. That may be the intro music.
So you want to talk about people. So here's how I got to know Vanilla Ice. We're at a concert, my wife and I, just up the road here. And the concert's over. And what Rob does amazingly is he stays all the way through and signs every autograph, takes every picture. It's amazing. Well, while I'm waiting for him to come down the line so I can get my little picture taken and whatever, the drummer is up on stage. And I'm like, in full disclosure, I'd had a few, you know, I was a little inebriated. I yell, "Hey, Keith, you should be down here too." Cause I'm like, he's part of the band. You know, he's got a drummer and a DJ and let me tell you, no one yells for the drummer at a Vanilla Ice concert. So Keith is like, so he comes down.
Who's that guy?
Keith and I vibe off each other. Keith is like one of my really good friends now. So Keith was like, "Hey man, if you're ever in town and you want to come to a concert, hit me up." I have been backstage hanging out with Coolio, Rob Bass, Color Me Bad, Salt and Peppa, you name it, Big Daddy, all because I recognize that dude was just as important as Rob on that stage.
Golly.
Incredible. Incredible.
Never guessed you had all those connections back there.
I never did the eyebrow thing, though. I didn't go that far.
Stage spots there, yeah.
Hey, Matt, as the host, get us back to track and field. Where are we?
I'm trying to figure out how to get you back to track and field, but I'm here about Coolio, Color Me.
I'm loving this. I'm loving it.
Wait, screw that all day. Yeah, this is good.
So, I mean, if you were able to sell, I was listening to another podcast about, you know, the gentleman was wealthy enough and he had worked himself from a 9-to-5 millionaire and he had put himself like where he'd been able to build a tennis court in his backyard, like a stay there tennis court, because he had the money. Like, if you were able to sell Vanilla Ice a track and be able to, hey, you know what, why don't you build a track, I roll right back into track and field easily, because Vanilla Ice is like, dude, Cunningham's my boy, let's go ahead and throw that out there, let's put a nice track and field stadium, something that some of the schools, USC, might be able to actually do some incredible things with or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I'm afraid he's a good businessman for real estate, and I'm sorry, a track complex, hey, you gotta do it. Yeah, won't do it. I know where I was, Matt. I'm taking over. I know where I was for track. So I was doing the Mike Cunningham experience.
Yes.
And then this past January, I decided, okay, it's time to start doing a podcast for Gill Athletics. And so my very first guest was Zeb Zion, the head coach at Evergreen State University. And yep. I'm so lucky that, you know, the first couple, like, you had to be pretty brave to allow me to do this. I mean, podcasts weren't what they are today for track and field back in January. So Zeb, you know, shout out to Zeb Zion. He trusted me and allowed him to be his first. He was my first guest. And then I was out at Harvard. So I got to, you know, talk with Kayba and Mark. And now, you know, it's pretty well known, the podcast. So it's, you know, I've got a list. I've got guests lined up for the next year since I've gone to just once a week on our original content.
I mean, I think the best thing about it is you've got the connections to be able to do that. And you get to hear stories. You get to learn things. I mean, you went 109 podcasts right now, 110, mm-hmm. that, which is an incredible number, I think, in general. But you get to listen and learn stories. And one of the best things I actually love is hearing the stories, hearing the names. I was just listening to Jim Canadles earlier this week. We bring up, you know, Gary Bjorklund, and you bring up some of the big names and Spivey. And, what did Spivey say? Like Jim said, if I get this correct, I'm sorry, Jim, but 11, I've seen 11 world records. And Jim's like, it's okay. I've been a part of four. Like, but those experiences, you hear those, the stories about Jesse Owens, I actually take them and use them to my track
my cross country girls and use them and say, hey, what about this happening? Did you ever think about this? Did you ever think about the almost? I mean, honestly, I just used that this morning. But I think one thing that we started out with our podcast was we realized that having this group was having conversations on the side. And on a Friday afternoon, I mean, full disclosure, we're at a Friday afternoon, sitting back, relaxing, chatting about the things that were affecting cross-country and track and field coaches, whether it be everything from salaries to getting a lawyer to the length of a track meet to how to score a track meet to how do we take care of each other to is the grass actually greener on the other side and things along those lines. I know that's one of the biggest bases that we started with a podcast because we were trying to figure out what in the world is actually going on and how do we make sure that we save ourselves in a pandemic world.
Or for Scott, $3 pizza right there. That was episode one, I think.
I was very upset with the cost of pizza in Reno, Nevada. I will, since we're on the subject, there's a new place that's about to open up that I'm kind of feeling good about. I'll be able to get a good pizza for a decent price.
Is it called
Finally
CC, where you can go and this great new place called CC's Pizza?
I'm pretty sure that's cheaper than mine.
Don't sleep on that.
See, the funny thing is I'm supposed to bring this back to track and field. Yeah,
these are the real issues that we had to talk about. What was it the next week? We talked about something else. It was pizza, and then what was the other one we talked about?
I think
haircuts during COVID. It was haircuts. Yeah,
the first one was the javelin, the fire.
The first one, that was javelin fire. Yep.
Yeah, the second one was the pizza.
And then you went into the haircuts, which I was like, why is – and I didn't understand because I'm like, why is John Bell talking about haircuts? So I was like
– I got no haircuts. I got nothing.
But it's the joy of a podcast to being able to take it and essentially a ball of clay and molding it. It keeps going. It keeps changing. And this is something in a podcast in general that has changed week by week, I think has done a lot. And we've been very, very blessed. One thing we've talked about this podcast, we've talked about off podcast. And I think, Mike, with your podcast, you guys have been able to see the same thing where there's a lot of value into what we're doing. And sometimes we question the value. Sometimes we wonder, is what we're doing actually worth it? And then we're fortunate and blessed enough to get, whether it be messages from other coaches, whether it be seeing other colleagues. I had a conversation with one of the panelists earlier today, and we saw some people sitting there talking, going, hey, maybe we should change the sport in this way, or maybe we should look into this sport, changing the sport in that way. And then we sit back going, but they were part of the podcast 5-10 weeks ago, going, holy cow, what we're doing, we believe and we pray is at least making an impact on what it is. Cause these are in our mind conversations that we would in almost verbatim conversations that we would have at the convention. And we would sit at the convention and big shout out to Sam Seams for everything he's done for that convention and the coach association. I mean, again, unbelievable job, but we'd sit down and have these conversations behind the scenes. It wasn't the symposiums that we're able to have and have the Busch Exciters and to have, the Lisa Senekevages and more people that have talked about some incredible things. It was, hey, let's skip that session and let's go talk about something we want to talk about. Darren and I have done that a few times where, it could be a lot of different topics, especially we're working with, and this might sound crazy, but the female triad and things along those lines. How do we do that? What do we do with things? Pull a couple people in there and say, let's go ahead and talk about these. And I know that's how ours is truly, truly spurred. And that's the nucleus that we started from. And you need a nucleus to be able to do these kind of things. Fun question here. What's the favorite guest you've ever had? You've had 109 podcasts. Is there one? Do you go back to Ashton? Do you go to Harry? Do you go to your first one ever? Do you go to, I know Jug Logan was a phenomenal guest. I mean, which do you have a favorite? I mean, you can be political if you want to. If not, you can go say, hey, you know what? Matt Eshoo was my best guy I've ever had.
First of all, was shocked at the numbers of Matt Eshoo's down. I'm like, you must have, I think you gamed it. I think you were just like on your phone, just tap, 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 download, download, download. Was absolutely shocked.
You realize I hate it. I don't listen to myself talk. I like did that and I was like, I am scared out of my mind. I'm done. I don't even know what this sounds like. Hopefully it sounds good. My wife hasn't even listened to it.
Well, she hears you enough. So that makes a lot of sense.
You're not kidding.
But anyway, honestly, and this can be perceived as the politically correct answer, everyone, when you say 100, so you were at 113. In fact, when this,
sorry,
when you're, no, that's okay. When you're listening, the numbers don't matter. When you listen, listening to this right now, we're going to have a great one. Do you guys, if you're on social, do you know the guy Daniel McKim? Makes those really funny track videos, and you know he's done. Yeah.
I love that guy. He is hilarious.
Yeah, you'll hear him on Monday. He is, and he was as hilarious as he is on those videos, man. And what a genuine guy. I mean, just a good family, a dad of five, just a great guy. But really, so it's not 113 different podcasts. So we're blessed to do, the goal is to give value. So when there's other podcasts, other mediums out there that provide value, I try to rebroadcast them because we do have an audience. I mean, you know,
a phenomenal audience. Yep.
You know, it's something special to be a part of a brand that's been around since 1918. There's not a lot of brands that have been around. So, you know, I take a very, it's very important to me that, you know, what we do with this brand during this small time that I'm going to be involved in it and keep it going for another 100 years. So we do have a, you know, an audience for that. So, you know, we're blessed to, rebroadcast the Athletics LLC, which is a similar, yeah. I'll call it a podcast. It's on YouTube, on Friday nights. They do a great job. And, you know, and what's interesting is while there's a lot of similarities to you guys here in this podcast, as far as you're all coaches and such, you know, they tend to stay on the Olympic elite level, and that's great. And you know, golly, those are fun meets to watch. My bread and butter is on the college. You know, what are we doing in college? So what you guys have done here is really, and from my perspective, you know, no longer a college track coach here, you're bringing the things to light that we know, but we don't talk about. What's going to be interesting from this podcast, the same things that they talk about, the issues that they talk about at Athletics LLC, even some of the other podcasts, you know, there's a great Throw Big, Throw Far. Joe Frontier does an amazing job. Grant Benzel runs a meme for throwers Instagram. He started a Faith and Field podcast. But what's going to be interesting with all these podcasts and all the issues and everything that we're learning and talking about, maybe not learning, we know a lot of these things, that the critical next step is going to be action. What action, I'm going to say you guys, because you're right here in front of me, but what action does the body of coaches that are now openly talking about some of these issues, what do you now put into effect? And it's really hard right now with COVID because we don't, you know, we just lost a season and a half-ish. We don't know what seasons are going to be available to us coming up. You got a lot of other concerns, almost like just hold the ship together right now. But to get across that big ocean, we got to start creating action now. And so that'll be, to me, as the outsider looking in, what comes of these? Or are we going to be in 5 years on this podcast talking about the same regional issues, you know, regional meets and qualifying and all that stuff? And that'll be disappointing.
I think that's one thing that when I first got into this business as well, and talking to many coaches, Coaches Org, Steve Placentia, guys along those lines that have been here for a long time, and guys I love and respect, the fact that, like, hey, you guys are battling the same things we did. When I proposed a brand new qualifying system to cross country in 2014, I believe it was, hey, we've done this before. We've done this already. And it's like, well, congratulations. You thought of something else we didn't think about. Can you do something different? And here we are sitting 6-7 years later going, well, we haven't moved the sport at all. You've attempted to, you haven't moved the sport. And we're just going to use cross country here for a second. We haven't moved the sport at all. It's the exact same thing that we're doing. The only thing that we debate is whether or not the Under Armour logo is an inch or 2 inches. The starting line is 2 meters in a box, or it's 2.5 meters in a box. And we need to move the sport forward. I think that's one of the biggest things that we haven't done. And I think there's a movement now to hopefully a push right now to get this going. And I've seen it sometimes a little bit in the exec committees with amongst a lot of the very young coaches in us that are starting to push and say, okay, enough with the old guard. Screw this. We've got to become more to the forefront. We've got to be a sport that is not back in the 1970s and this is how it was done. It was the 1980s and that's how it was done. You know, the 6 of the 10K just happened to be a handshake deal behind the scenes, and that's how it became the 10K at the NCAAs. It was nothing else. So how can we get things to get moving? There's a bigger story there. We won't go into it. How do we get things moving? Go ahead, Darren.
Actually, we've talked about this before. Yep. We talked about this before, but our hope is that this podcast and this material that we bring forward empowers coaches and individuals to talk about the things that Mike's talking about that we've always known but never talked about. You know, let me, and hopefully it gives them confidence to say, all right, move forward with this.
But let me tell you something. So our CEO at Gill, he's not going to listen to this, so he won't hear me tell you how smart he is, but he is. When you say that, you know, your hope out of this, Darren, you know, my boss would turn to me and say, hope is not a strategy. And what I mean by that is it goes back down to action, and there's going to be mistakes made, but things have to, you have to do things. And what I would challenge, not only you guys here on this panel here, but anybody who's listening to this and thinks that, you know what, we're not on the right course for track and field, whether it's college, high school, or just the track in general, track and field world in general, get involved. Mm-hmm. For us here in the college level, it's USTFCCA and those executive committees and all the different stuff like there. I don't care what, if you want to say it's playing the political game or whatever, you got to be in it. Make your voice heard and call out the crap. Now, you talked about the old guard, Matt, and I think there's, I would change that language a little bit just because I think there's some things for us to learn from the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to respect the past to be able to keep going. So, yes.
But when a coach or coaches or conference, whatever, wants to pull rules because it's going to benefit them and their team right now, we need more people calling that crap to the carpet and thinking about track moving forward. I understand you're going to retire in 10 or 20 years, so all you care about is your team right now. Well, you talk a big game about doing this for the kids. Well, then do it for those kids who are going to be coaches one day and make this sport thriving for them when they get into this profession.
Absolutely. John, well, go ahead.
I honestly think I think with Leroy, just having him on a few weeks back and hearing his language and his motivation to change things, I think it's promising.
Well, I was going to say, I think probably the biggest difference, and this is just anecdotal thought on my end, is that, you know, you look, you know, when Matt proposes to a qualifying system in 2014 for cross country, and some of the older coaches say, well, we've already tried this years ago. I think the difference now is the world is smaller because of technology, because of things like this. The things that they talk about on Athletics LLC are fantastic. I watch that show every week. I think it's awesome.
They do a great job.
And I would never, like, I've never once had a conversation with any of those coaches personally. But I feel a connection to them just by watching their show. And I feel like I could walk up to them at the convention and talk to them. So it starts to bridge that gap a little bit. And I think what's going to happen now is you're going to have coaches, because of podcasts or, you know, just these different forums, are going to start talking more and more and more to one another. And I think in years past, you know, when I say years past, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, they might go to the convention, whatever it looked like then, of, you know, a handful of coaches sitting around a convention room, you know, a ballroom for 2 days. And then they go to their own institutions and they don't see each other. Kind of like what you said, Mike, at the very beginning, you know, you go to the national meeting, it was just your conference coaches hanging out.
Yep.
You know, it became so siloed. It was siloed years and years and years ago, whereas now coaches talk to one another. They communicate with one another. They can bring these issues. You know, it's not a once in a year conversation. It's a year long conversation. So I think that vetting process is just going to be deeper and broader and, you know, less maybe intimidating. You know, when you're at the convention, I think, Matt, when you first proposed that, it was a little intimidating.
I was a little scared. I'm not going to lie.
A little scary. Yep. But now I don't, you know, maybe that's age. Maybe that's experience. And I've been around a little bit longer. It's probably that too. But I just think coaches are closer now because of technology. And we've been forced to, because of coronavirus, to actually talk to one another. Yeah, we don't see each other at meets. So we've had to develop this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, you always have to have an end game, right? If you're going to change things, you're doing that because you want something to be different. I think you have to start maybe more acutely defining what is that you want to change. A lot of things that we've talked about here in your 18 episodes has been about nobody in the stands, which to me it blows my mind. You know, track and field in the high school and collegiate level is the number one participatory sport that there is.
Yeah.
how do we not have average fans? I mean, we have more people walking around that did some form of track and field that then played football, and yet NFL sells it out when they're allowed, you know? So it's just amazing to me that we can't get people at the stands. So if that is the issue, we need to become an event that people come to. Okay, then what changes do you need to make for that to happen? And then you can start defining what are the actual changes that need to occur, whether it's qualifying, number of events, what is the definition of a meet, dual tries, etc.
It's one of those things we do need to get back to. We've talked about a lot on this podcast is how do we, and Mike Erb has had a phenomenal idea sometimes on how do we change meet? What do we do for things to mm-hmm. get moving on meets and move that stuff along? Because yeah, no, we've got a bigger repertoire. I mean, we look every single time and we put on social media on, hey, the NCAA and the NCAA track and field is one of the top three most participated sports, or in the top two, we're number one, or most high school, we're number two, number three, and whatever the case might be. It's like, yeah, but nobody gives a rat's ass what we're actually doing, because I'd be honest, all of us have said this on podcasts before. I don't want to get to a track meet at 7 a.m. and leave at 9 a.m., especially even if I have to coach from 9 to 9. Oh, forget that. I got other things to do. And I hate to say it because I love the sport. I love what we do. Cross country is way better than track and field when it comes to spectator thing. And forget track meets, but cross country people will come back to watch a cross country meet because they know they're in, they're out, they're done. We host the conference championships next weekend. We have a 9 o'clock race and a 10 o'clock race. Boom, we're done. Last weekend, we hosted the largest cross country race in the country. And big shout out to UAB Athletics, to our training staff, to your equipment staff and our operations people who put the thing on. We started at 7:45. We were there at 6 a.m., started at 7:45. We were done by, I think I was home by noon, 12:30. Okay? We started racing at 7:45. Our last race was at 10:20. We're done. You can get lead. Yeah, you missed breakfast a little bit. You're home for lunch, right? You're home for a brunch. Track meets.
Well, we can go back to what Mike – we can go back to what Mike said early on and what John has said.
Yep.
Multiple times. It's about that work-life balance for coaches too. You know, I mean – you know, you're talking about year-round competition. You miss 3 or 4 days a week, travel. You're there all day. You're exhausted when you get home. So there's not a lot of emotional energy you're bringing to your family. You know, I just think these are all things to consider, not just from a spectator point of view, from coaches' longevity. And, you know, I mean, just like Mike alluded to, coaches burned out, you know, looking back with regrets and saying, hey, I need to spend more time with my, you know, I mean, I understand that. I understand that we're in a place where we have to travel a lot. And so, you know, I mean, to be able to condense that down, I think it'd be awesome.
Well, you know, I'm kind of famous on my podcast of challenging my guest. So I've got kind of two challenges for you guys and for anybody listening. Now, one is get your priorities in check. I'm sorry, your job, whether, and I'm talking to a bunch of track coaches here, I get it. This includes guys like me. Your job is not number one. I'm sorry. And if it is, go seek some help. You need some help. Okay. That's not right. So family, you know, you gotta be family first. Wherever your faith is probably should be first, but you know, your family, others, self, your job. I know coaching, track and field specifically is an extremely, extremely special profession. I'm so blessed that I was able to do it for 10 years. I'm so blessed that I get to talk to guys and gals that do what you do every day. There is nothing better, but it is not who you are. You are people whose professions is coaching track and field. You're not coach. You know, that's a title. You are father, brother, sister, son, daughter. So I'm going to challenge you to get your priorities in check now, before it's too late. And two, when it comes to on the professional side here, when we're talking about track meets and 2 hours, 3 hours and stuff like that,
yep.
Some of you specifically in this panel have this control right now. All of you in this panel through your careers will have this power. Show it. If you really believe that a track meet should be 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever time frame, when you host a home meet, make it a 3 hour home meet then. If you want to see change, you've got to be the change. So start right now where you are. You have that power. If I come to your track meet and it's 7 hours and I'm like, well, you were just BSing then. You don't really think track meet should be 3 hours because it's your home meet. You can do whatever you want with it. And here you are. So I'm gonna challenge you. If you want to start seeing other people, we want to get the whole sport to whatever this magic time frame is. Well, someone's got to lead, baby. And I challenge you guys, lead the way.
I think that's actually a perfect challenge right there, because we do talk a lot. A lot of us have been on executive committees. I know three or four of us in this group have been on executive committees and attempting to make changes for things. So we are attempting to make changes, but you're right. Challenge it. Rethink the way things are done. Rethink the way cross meets are done. Track meets are done. They're promoted. They're, I guess they're broadcast, the social media side of stuff. Rethink everything. And I think one of the biggest things you have to do is step outside the damn box. You know, we've got a box that we live in because of whatever the restrictions are that were on before us, whether it be everything from payment to meets to what we do to how we get paid. You know, step outside of the box, be willing to push a little bit and say, you know what? That's how other sports have done things. That's how baseball is so big on TV. That's how volleyball, the, you know, the championships get put on TV. That's how those guys get moved forward. Well, we're still sitting in the quicksand and, you know, still spinning our wheels because we're not being able to move forward. Mike, I absolutely, I think that's a phenomenal way to look at it. We've got to be challenged no matter what we do with everything, because we are track coaches and we tend to like the way things are, and we don't want to rough, you know, we don't want to muddy the waters. We don't want to ruffle the seas, whatever analogy you want to use. We are scared to do that because we're scared of losing our jobs. Until people start pushing a little bit, it's not going to happen. So I agree with you 100%. I really, at the same time as well, I truly appreciate you being on the podcast tonight. It was an absolute pleasure and it was an absolute joy. I know we went left, we went right, we came back center, then we went right, then we went left, and we came back center. And all of a sudden we went backwards, then we went straight back forward again. So, but Mike, I truly appreciate you being on here.
My honor, guys. I mean, again, I love what you're doing. I'm big fans. I think what you're doing is going to make a difference. I don't hope that it's going to make a difference. I know it's going to make a difference. And it's easy to challenge guys like you, because I know what you've done in your career. I know you'll take that on and you'll blow that challenge out. You'll start challenging other people. I know change is going to happen because of what you're doing here.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that. It's been an absolute honor to have you on here. Listeners, if you haven't had the chance to go over to Mike's page, to the Gill Athletics Connections podcast, please go ahead, jump on there, Spotify, Anchor, iTunes, whatever the case might be. Set yourself up for some incredible lessons from Mike and his guests. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to understand a lot of history, and you're going to be just blessed with what he does, because what he does for the sport is unbelievably incredible. But also, when you do go ahead and click that button to be able to be notified. Notify us as well. You guys have been doing an incredible job. We're thankful for where we are and what we're doing. This has been just something that we have seen take off, and we're very excited about it. If you have an idea for a guest, for a topic, for something you'd like the panel to go ahead and pull a chair up to the table about and talk about, please let us know that. We're more than willing to talk about anything and everything that can affect coaches, because sometimes we forget about things. That's just the way things can happen. So, but we do appreciate you making us one of your podcasts of choice every week. Hopefully you listen to a few of them. But again, one of the best podcasts in the country right now. We're excited about that kind of stuff. But gentlemen, it was great having everybody here. We're excited about next week. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, we'll try and do better next week. So without further ado, we'll talk to you guys in a week. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Guys.
Appreciate you very much.